Brian Eno. On some faraway beach from the album Here Come the Warm Jets. Before that, an excerpt from Peace Music by the Spontaneous Music Orchestra from the album For You to Share. And that's it for me. I gotta make room for Miracle Nutrition coming up momentarily. You're tuned to Freeform Radio, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. My name is Fabio. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'll be back on January 1st, 2026. Jim Price will be filling in for me next week. So that should be fun. Okay. See ya. Bye.
Help me get the Christmas tree down from the attic.
We don't have an artificial Christmas tree.
I know.
You didn't.
I'm embarrassed.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wyatt. I'm Hardy Wyatt. Join me now as we experience a story together. The story of our life, which isn't much of a story. It's a write your own ending and beginning story. And wouldn't it be nice to have someone else write it for you? It's like going to a steak place and having to cook it yourself. Who wants to do that? What's a good Christmas movie?
You mean a good movie, like Susan Lucci's version of A Christmas Carol where she plays Ebby Scrooge, or campy good, like White Christmas?
Just a good Christmas movie.
I know a lot of people say Die Hard, but it's no more a Christmas movie than it is an L.A. movie.
It's really a NASA Zeiss 50mm f.7 planar lens movie.
So, Christmas movies. I'm stumped.
Is Nightmare Before Christmas a Halloween movie?
What's the one with snow on everything?
Dr. Zhivago?
Yes!
I don't think so.
Is there a movie that's just a Christmas story?
Like A Christmas Story?
Yeah, like it's just a Christmas story.
A Christmas Story.
Yeah, start naming them.
Dummy, that's the name of the movie.
Dummy,
Jeez, there's a movie, the name of which is A Christmas Story. It's based on a Gene Shepherd story.
Gene with a J?
How did you hear that?
Oh, I got a good ear.
Anyway, there's a movie called A Christmas Story, and it's purportedly written by Gene Shepherd. But it's actually based on a Cole Shack the Night Stalker episode called Christmas Stalking.
What? Prove it.
I happen to have the tape right here.
Just on your person?
Yeah, so?
Thank you.
They were tearing up an old freeway just when one of the world's most famous visitors had the most unfortunate luck to be passing by on the one day of the year when he left his house. On December 24th, or rather the wee hours of the 25th, a certain jolly elf named Santa Claus, no middle name, miraculously flew his sled a little too close to a closed stretch of Interstate 55 and made the fatal mistake of landing to help what he thought was a child in distress, but turned out to be something far more sinister and dangerous.
Is that a small child on the interstate? Let's put her down here and see. Little boy, are you okay? It's me, Santa Claus, can you believe it?
Where's my BB gun?
BB gun? What BB gun? Maybe it's around here somewhere.
You were supposed to bring me a BB gun and didn't.
No, that happens. Usually a supply chain thing or mom.
Oh boy, was I mad at Santa. So I let him have it with my death ray.
Deck the halls with bells of holly, ho, 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 etc., etc., etc. I'm about to go on Christmas vacation.
Not so fast, Kolchak.
Not so fast! Maybe I need to leave even faster, given your tone.
No, you're going to love this, Kolchak. It's right up your alley.
Right up my alley, is it? Well, let's go down that alley together and see.
Santa Claus has been murdered with some kind of death ray.
Oh, Vincenzo! Why would you think I would delight in such news? This is unbelievable. Where did it happen? The North Pole? The Mall?
A close stretch of 55.
An ignoble fate for such a mighty Saint Nick.
Get down there and get some pictures of the sleigh and see what you can dig up. Santa Claus was beloved.
He was! And for all I knew, immortal. That comes with a bit of a shock. It was 9 a.m. on Christmas Day, and I'd yet to even buy presents for my patiently awaiting family. The old lady and my lackluster sons, Randy and Ralphie. Who's all bent out of shape, I bet, about not getting a BB gun. The fact is, I hit it, but good. And I'm gonna let him have his little tantrum before dramatically whipping out the aforementioned BB gun.
Don't mess with the old man.
What are you babbling about, Kolchak? This is a crime scene, not a cotillion.
No, I wasn't trying to interfere, Captain. Just exercising my freedom of the press. And a huge figure like Santa being murdered in your fair city? Well, that's quite the story.
What do you know about this, Kolchak?
No, nothing. Just what happened written in the papers yet. Is that Santa? Oh, he doesn't look so good. Death ray, do you think?
All right, Kolchak. Get out of here and take your questions with you.
But, Captain, I knew the man. I once sat on his lap for crying out loud.
Out, before I have you arrested.
On Christmas, and me here, still dealing with the trauma of losing Santa. And his brutal death, Bile. Is that death ray? Do you think? But I'm going. Well, what's this?
What are you doing?
No, nothing, Captain. Just leaving. It's a Red Ryder comic book. Evidence or not, this saves me an extra shopping trip for the kids. Wait a minute.
Are you still here, Kolchak?
There's a human leg in the construction there.
Get over here, boys, we have a leg.
Wait a minute, I recognize that leg. That's my leg.
Very funny, Kolchak. Get him out of here.
No, I'm serious. That's my lamp.
Lamp?
Yes, that's the lamp I wanted. It should be at my house in the window for all to see. Why is it buried here at a construction site?
Because it crossed the chicken's road. Now get him out of here, Kolchak, before I ask you nicely.
I'm leaving. But if my lamp is not at my house when I get home, you'll be hearing from my attorneys.
Oh boy, was I embarrassed. I had really messed up. How was I supposed to know the old man had hidden the BB gun? I assumed that Santa had stiffed me. So in a fit of rage, I took the old man's prized lamp and headed out to a closed stretch of interstate that was rumored to be the lair of a great and powerful demon. And I made an offering to it that night in exchange for the power to manifest a death ray and destroy Santa. Now my old man, the crack reporter Carl Kolchak, was on the case. Oh, was I in for trouble.
Excuse me, do you work here at the Santa booth?
It's called the North Pole Village.
My mistake. I'm Carl Kolchak, Independent News Service. Did you know Santa?
Of course I knew Santa. He was a co-worker. If you could call what he did work.
I see. Well, did he have any enemies or mention any threats?
Enemies? No enemies. No friends either.
No friends?
A guy like that? Unknowable. Also, most people aren't happy with what they get for Christmas, so a lot of people have beefs with the man elf.
Anyone in particular?
There was this one kid. He asked for a BB gun. And then Santa said he had to think about it. We've got supply chain issues at the moment. The kid starts talking in a demon voice.
Demon voice, eh? What did he look like?
He looked the way snot makes you feel.
I have a kid like that.
Listen, I didn't like the guy, but I didn't wish him dead. I don't know many who do, given how many jobs depends on this guy showing up one day a year to work.
Do you mind telling me your name?
I don't care to.
All right.
It's Larry Swan.
I thought you said...
I spent a lot of time in Kentucky, sorry. Picked up some of the expressions.
Thank you, Larry.
Go to hell.
Is that another Kentucky expression?
No, Brooklyn, I think.
After extensive investigation, it was becoming clear that the heinous crime against mythology and humanity had been perpetrated by none other than my ever-disappointing progeny, Ralphie, who, when forced into the humiliation ritual of a bunny costume, offered little resistance and has now turned his selfish greed against the very symbol of giving. I've never been prouder of the boy. Case closed.
I see what they're saying. Even if vampires are real, we can never prove it.
That's what you got from that TV episode.
Well, there were subtler things like issues of identity and consciousness, but also political stuff that was pretty obvious. I guess at the end of the day, it was just a Christmas story.
Hey, what are you guys talking about?
Apparently, there's a movie called A Good Christmas Movie.
What? I don't know either, and I've been here the whole time. Anyway, we were just keeping the mic warm for you. You can take over now. Okay, thank you, guys. Well, hello, friends. Isn't it wonderful to have a special Christmas story? Not particularly, but that's what we're doing today, because it's all people always looking for a Christmas-themed something near Christmas. You don't find this too much around, you know, other holidays. Say, oh, it's Sukkot. I wonder if there's a good Hallmark film. Well, sometimes we like a good Christmas story. And this isn't a Christmas episode. This is what's ironic. It's the week before Christmas. And so I'm going to read you a little story called A Week Before Christmas by Angelic and Sogay. It was a week before Christmas. And all through the house, there were presents and people saying, it's Christmas about. And you guys have seen the presents. They have all the presents there and all the house. You can see the fire.
The house was so warm and so nice this time of year.
I love this time of year. I like Christmas year.
Dad's drunk. He's supposed to say cheer. Yeah, he is drinking the Christmas cheer. No, well, there's no real book. I'm so sorry. I'm just pretending. That's the wonderful thing about art and cinema and everything. It's just pretending. And so when you say something like, oh my goodness, The Christmas Story that has Darren McGavin in it is also the same universe as Night Stalker, Kolchak the Night Stalker. And people have been saying that since the movie came out. Everybody saw that and they go, wait a minute. And that's because that is there really a line between fantasy and reality? Is it all just the same thing? So you look at that. I've never met Darren McGavin. But boy, I get to watch Kolchak all the time. It's a reality show about him. I don't know where the camera is, and they have it placed all over. But that's what TV feels like. And so the actors feel a little bit secondary, don't they? And when they appear elsewhere, we imagine it's just that character doing something else. Imagine the chaos that Peter Capaldi brought to the Doctor Who universe by being someone just hanging out in Pompeii. And they were like, well, he must have seen that guy and thought, well, that's a good face. No one's ever seen Peter Capaldi's face and thought, oh, that should be my next face. I mean, maybe they have. I don't know. Bless him. He's a good look. Anybody in show business is good looking, unless they aren't. Some people are in it say, oh, I want to go the Rondo Hatton route and just be so hideous, you know. People try to say that Shemp wasn't attractive, but I look at him and I say, what a loving face he had, really. Maybe it's a little bit, you know, craggy or whatever. Who knows where all those wrinkles come? If you see a picture of his father, didn't win any, beauty contests. And mom looks like she did all the work, which she did. Oh, my goodness. I am so excited to bring you anything that will cheer you up because, boy, life is difficult. And so what I want to do really today is tell a very special story about how bad stories are, really, by limiting your vision and just taking a little bit of something and thinking it explains something else. Let me be clear. Occasionally, they will find a skeleton in a chimney. Oh, yes, somebody will be renovating something or thinking, gosh, we went to use the fireplace this year, and we lit a fire, and down come a thumb bone, and then down come a wrist bone, and then all sorts of things, and a femur, and countless other types of bones, perhaps, and say, what's going on here? And then they, on closer examination, they see that there is the remains, a body in the flu. And because Christmas is flu season, at least for Santa, say, you know, maybe that's him. Because you think, well, the only person I've heard about ever crawling in to chimneys is this guy who's famous for it. There's songs, there's shows about it, they show him doing it. So should I find a skeleton in there, it's probably him. Here's the thing, though. It never is. And it never could be. And so it blocks you off to other explanations of things because you think, well, I have that's my picture of the world. I've got some more evidence. And here's where it plugs in. When I do crossword puzzles, I have a very liberal idea of what fits. What fitting is. And so a lot of times I say, I know it doesn't match the pattern, or does that little nub go into that little socket there exactly? No, not perfectly. But why let good be the enemy of great puzzles? And so I jam it in there, and my gosh, when I first heard that you can't get a square peg in a round hole or something, I was like, try me. Hold my square beer. Because I'll make it happen. And I've always, so it didn't, those things didn't resonate with me, those lessons. My goodness, I will make things fit and I will jam them together. And I didn't realize that that's what poetry was. I'll get to that in a minute. But really, that's what it is. Poetry is like color mixing. You know, color theory. What's the first time that you remember seeing, for having color theory come alive for you, where you could mix colors and get two colors and get a third? Mine was peeing into one of those Tidy Bowl toilets. So you open up the toilet and you go, oh my goodness, it's as blue as I imagine the Mediterranean. Look at that. And so then you start weeing into it. Let's say it's the morning and your pee is what they call concentrated. And you go in there and all of a sudden the blue Mediterranean transforms into the sort of emerald green Caribbean Sea. And you think, did I do that with my pee-pee? And you did, and color theory did it too. And you say, my gosh, that's fantastic. Now I understand that yellow pee and Tidy Bowl, it doesn't have to be Tidy Bowl. There's other blue things that contain, what is it, cobalt? I don't know what makes the blue. Gosh, who knows? Probably some dye from snails that come from Haiti. I don't know. We used to get, what's the blue dye that used to come from Haiti? It's one of the, oh, indigo. That's one of the, people used to like indigo so much, they were like, hey, we'll have a genocidal slavery epidemic in order to get indigo. Also, sugar's really good. And so they like sugar in their coffee. So much, they liked wearing purple and drinking sugary coffee so much that they were willing to kill millions and millions of humans. How about that? So they're just like us, weren't they? People in the past. And you know, Christmas has been celebrated the same way even before Jesus. Isn't that something? How do they know what to call it? That's just crazy. Well, probably I mean, I'm not a scholar or anything, I'd say, but like if it'd been around a lot, who's to say that Jesus wasn't named after Christmas? Here's my rationale, Elvis Costello. So who knows who did what first? That's not what's important. I think what's important is the feeling or how your soul, whether it remains intact or not. Now, how can my soul remain intact? Well, let's wrap it up. Wrap it up like a present. Oh, my goodness. That's how I'm segueing into my little tip right now. I'm going to call present wrapping tips and gift ideas. It's a little late for that, but not really. And etc. Now, when my grandmother went to do any kind of gift shopping, she loved to catalog. But not the classic catalogs, those Sears catalogs, you see. So who couldn't love that, those big thick ones? But sort of the 70s version that came in the mail that said something like, you know, Eclectic Village, or I don't know what it would say. It would have a little barn on it. And there was lots of gifts that have nothing to do with one another. And basically, it's just cottage core Spencers or something. I don't know. So, this looks lovely. You could use that on your cup. It goes on the bottom of a cup. Okay. So stuff like that. My grandmother would order it. And sometimes she'd get you fancy stuff, too, if the Neiman Marcus catalog came. Oh, many of you were too young to ever get a Neiman Marcus catalog. They still have them. It's where I first smelled Creed Aventus, which I can't afford, right? You say, it's a little scratch and sniff of Creed Aventus. And when I say scratch and sniff, I don't mean like the 1979 Hustler Centerfold that was scratch and sniff. Look it up, 78, 79, 80, 81, 80. But there was this sample of Creed Aventus. You know, smell of it. And boy, it's remarkable. And that's just, how much is it? So it's merely $800. Would you like three? No, I'm good. I don't need this catalog. It's not for me, is it?
No, it isn't, Mr. Clampett. What?
The Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills just called. Do not turn that man away. That's J.D. Clampett, the millionaire.
So that's what I would hope they would do with me, but I don't think so. Go in that old dang old Neiman Marcus or something, and they'd say, you know, you just... Sir, I'm here to look at the his and her submarines. Because they would have things like that back in the day. They would have one gift in that catalog that was for sheiks or something. I don't know at the time. I'm trying to think. Like, this was the 70s in my memory. So, like, who was the richest person in the world? Was I don't know if Howard Hughes was still alive. His fingernails had inherited his wealth. And his fingernails and his poo sat in a jar in Hollywood. And they were making the decisions and everything. It was flying around in the revived Spruce Goose. So I don't know who bought these things, but I don't know that there was a submarine, but it was felt like things like that, you know, like one of the gifts was Liberace's fingers with a ring on it, which is like, ooh, there's only one of those. Well, there's 10 of those, but he needs the rest. So stuff like junk like that would be wonderful. I would like a cat. Here's a good idea for a catalog, and I don't know that it exists as in one place, and that would be just the memorabilia of hard-up celebrities. So it'd be, and I know it's probably scattered. But, I mean, that would have been good for OJ. He could have gone, hey, man, there's one place I could get, put everything there instead of this. So I don't know. I know that Burt Reynolds was selling his stuff for a while. Maybe that was after his bit, but I don't think so. Sometimes you come into hard times and you think, maybe, you know, this piece of memorabilia from a show, you know, everybody likes some dinky from Why Me. The glasses, Dinky's glasses from Why Me. So, and then somebody will buy them. But it'd be nice if that was all in one space. And I don't know what celebrities' things I would want even, really. I saw that David Lynch's things went up for sale. That's interesting. His house, that'd be a fun novelty thing to have. I think they were asking a lot of money for that, though. And then there was, but there were other items. Somebody's going to get that. Mr. Coffee Maker is going to go for a lot. More than it should because of, you know, how things are attached to things. I know that from Antiques Roadshow. So, you know, to bring something on and you go, normally, you know, used stained underwear is worthless. But you say this is Elvis's. So it matters who, you know, who had it and all that kind of things. This was inside who? Oh, he's a celebrity. So it matters where it's been in the provenance, things like that. Prove that it was owned by Peter Lorre, and I will buy it. That's the thing. But I got to know he had it. I got to know that Wally Cox wore that. Gosh, I wish I could. I can't wear. If anybody gave me Wally Cox's wardrobe, I'd go, oh, he's so much smaller than I. So I don't know whose things I'd like. Oh, George Kennedy's blazers. Well, I could use those. So I wonder if there was that too, a used clothing store in Hollywood just called, you know, Sports Coats of the Stars. Johnny Carson had his own line, as you know, of sports coats, and he would wear them on the show. And you could see them and go, I like that one. Johnny's wearing that green one today, and I saw it at down at Burdine's. So I've done that just recently. You watch those old Johnny Carson shows, pick a jacket you like, go on eBay, search Johnny Carson jacket, 1978 or something, and boom, you probably get it. I got a couple that I looked for directly. I go, man, Johnny, I like that one that Johnny's wearing tonight. I want it. And you say, well, aren't those out of style? I can't tell. Can you tell? I can tell with cars that are old, but sometimes clothes I can't. So your clothes are out of style. I super can't tell with sneakers anymore because how old I am. So, you know, and also because people like vintage things. So I don't know where we are on the circular timeline. Is this in or out? I have no idea. I did that. I made that mistake in the 80s because I thought, man, I'm gonna have a disco band. But it was not. It was between, you know, urges. And so that's just the thing. You got to know when to set up your food cart because there's times where you go, why isn't anybody interested? Well, it's just not that time. And the frustrating thing is you come back later and it's going to be popular. Like, I know this. I've always thought, you know, Hardy, I think that your reward is going to be, you know, you're going to be popular posthumously. And then I looked it up and I went, oh, well, that's disappointing because I was hoping to be here for it. And then a little voice in my head said, well, what if life is like Family Circus? And you can look down from a cloud upon your legacy and see everybody get so excited about, so you're looking down and you go, look, they love me now. And a voice to your right goes, I know the way that feels. Look at them. They killed me dead and now I'm on the penny. And you go, oh, Lincoln.
Yes, sir. I just wondered the same thing. Lincoln.
So, hey, Dead Lincoln. Maybe this is the head. I didn't want to say anything. Oh, good. Did he talk that way in life, or is that just because he got shot? You know, you don't want to ask that stuff in heaven. What happened on Earth stays on Earth. And then we're up there just clouds sitting and having a wonderful time looking back down on our legacies and haunting our children. And we say, I'm going to sneak up on one of them. You know, don't do that. Leave them be. But it would be nice. But here's the thing. Let's say that's not possible. But I want you, some of our keener listeners will notice that it just happened. Like, I just experienced it. I, through this medium of, this well-done medium of poor, or whatever it is, this rare well-done medium, done poorly, is a way of experiencing something like that that maybe I will never experience. So I like looking it back at my life now. I just imagine I'm dead. I'm having a hard time with bills and debts and things because I can't convince other people I'm dead yet. They keep seeing me. It's like reverse ghost dad. It's like, oh, you don't see me. And you go, Dad, we see too much of you. So I wish I was a little bit invisible. That's a rough wish. If you get a genie, you go, I wish I was a little bit invisible. They'll either make you, like, translucent, like, right? Like you're the wrong opacity in Photoshop. It's like, I see right through you, buddy. Or half of you is invisible and you're just a floating torso. So that's, people think they're ducking under you and their face hits your crotch. It's like, no way, I'm just invisible, man. It's not like I don't exist there. I thought you were floating torso. I'm sorry, I put my face in your privates. Don't worry about it. People do it all the time. I wished I was half invisible. No, I didn't. That genie tricked me. I said I wished I was partially invisible or invisible half the time or something. He thought I wasn't. He heard what he wanted to hear. There's no justice. Well, I don't know who you'd go to for justice. Go, I went to a Babylonian lamp store or whatever he's from. No, he's from, where is he from? East, is he from South Asia, the genie? I don't want to miss whatever him. Gosh, Jin, that feels like that's a tale from that area, I think. I don't know much about cultures, but gosh, I come from a place that doesn't have one. And so when we encounter other cultures, we go, woo! Is this? And they say, tell us your stories. And say, well, where I come from, my grandmother called a story. It was just a lie. She'd go, don't quit telling stories. So we don't really too much. What are you talking about, though? What are your stories? Because we have tales we tell, but there we swear they're true. So there's really nothing that we say. I think we do have stories, but they're true. Oh, like what? Well, Paul Bunyan. There's a giant with a giant ox. And I don't know, that's where we got a lot of the features that you see in the geography. They're caused by either giants or large animals or the body part of some giant. So isn't that silly? And but that's how things are done. I mean, that's how they're made and everything. Does that information, is that less harmful or better for you than accurate information? Because when I found out how the Grand Canyon was made, oh my gosh, people always go, oh, the reality of it is so much more interesting. Not anymore. Now I know. And then you go, well, yeah, that tracks. I guess that water would do that over time. Well, aren't you astounded? There are vast timelines that are really inconceivable, and people really can't conceive of them. They just know to go, wow. But you can't really think. It short circuits my little animal brain. So to be honest, when you tell me things like that, I just gloss over. It's really easier to tell me a giant made it with its foot. I'd probably be more impressed. And you said, well, that's not very good. It's not true. I understand that, but I'm not really doing anything where truth, I would need it. Because if I was doing something like teaching a geology course, I could understand that. But, don't you have a numinous experience when you look at, numinous, look it up. I'm not Google. A numinous experience when you look out at that Grand Canyon. Do you not sense something wholly other? Is it not transformative, Hardy? Aren't you moved? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But it is a feeling, and I'm not thinking very much about erosion. I don't think. Now, there is in human nature, since everybody is pretty much just the same annoying person, a necessity to be contrarian. So no matter what I say, there is part of you that's thinking the absolute opposite because you believe that all of life needs balance, that things that are purported to be fact or opinion need to be challenged. And the only time that you are willing to suspend this is when it's a story. And you think, I don't think it's necessary to contradict something that I saw on Star Trek. I know you're laughing. That's ironic because people do that all the time, don't they? I know I'm baffled by it. It's like it is literally a story. And you have a wonderful opportunity to go create your own. But the idea of making every story you hear a collaborative effort, that's very strange. That's why I say I think they're damaging and unnecessary.
I'm going to have to go ahead and take issue with you, Hardy.
Well, why is that, I'm thinking? Because I think both our lives would be better if you just laughed it off and move on. Oh, my goodness. That's how I want to approach life that way. Say, oh, look at that thing. Does it need fixing, challenging, acknowledging, experiencing? Probably one of those things. But a couple of those things I'm not going to do just because I can't see any point in it. And the nearer I get to the finish line, oh, yes, there is one. Life is a constant journey. Well, what I see, though, among my loved ones and my family is it's traditional at some point to go completely limp and then start to decompose. We don't really get to that point because it's been happening in our family so many times that we recognize now, call someone. And so now we know what to do. But, oh, imagine our surprise like a million years ago. You go, boo, what's wrong with Og? Wake up, Og. That kind of thing. Wonder if at any time. You wonder. I don't know what clams go. What kind of level of life is like? I know elephants are a wreck. Elephants are just a big, big, nervous, grieving, you know, my baby. That's what elephant means. That's what their name means in their native language. Because that's just the vibe I get from elephants in general. It's my baby. Maybe that's from Dumbo or something. But they act like that. They're very nurturing and maternal and gentle, unless like you get them mad and then they crush you. And I think that's very beautiful to me. I love elephants and identify with them. I think they're magical creatures. And there's some animals that I identify with like them, and there's others that I don't. It's not that I don't identify with them, but it's just like some of the neighbors, you know? Some of them you talk to and chat with, the other ones you wish well, and you know to stay out of their driveway or something because they don't look when they back up. Like, you know, alligators. Ugh. Alligators. They got their coffee, backing up, never look around, never use the backup camera. That's my analogy. So don't go swimming with them sometimes because they just will grab your leg and go, oh, it's a deer. It's like, think through, alligator. Does that look like a deer leg?
Oh, wait a minute.
Because they don't end up not eating you. Alligators are also the part of ourselves that buys a lot of stuff, puts it in the fridge crisper, and then is like, oh, man, I guess I got to throw away those green peppers. You know, why do you keep buying them and then having to just throw them away without using them? If you got a nice, fresh green pepper, if you're not making Foley with that, if you're not crushing that and then labeling the file skull crush, then I don't know what's wrong with you. My goodness, the way that we waste food like that, then you eat it. I had a session like that where I grabbed a lot of vegetables. I snapped and crushed and everything. And then I just sat there and I ate the most poorly made salad that you can imagine. So all of the vegetables are hand crushed by our chef. Wearing rubber gloves that you can smell. The kind that you can smell that aren't meant for that, aren't meant for food. So that would be the theme of my restaurant. There was a cook-it-yourself restaurant in Tallahassee that burned down. I don't want to name it. I remember the name, but it was an indoor barbecue place. I know you're thinking I'm making this up. And also, it was owned by a guy who was known for burning down his businesses. I'm getting in a lot of trouble. I think he's long dead. But he had burned down his businesses before. That was always in his business plan. It was like, oh, losing money. And then burn. And then he'd take that money and use it as seed money. It was the Phoenix business plan. And then he'd open up something else. So this time he opened up the place and goes, I'm going to build the fire right into the whole plan. Because I think, you know, the idea that this second place can burn down is probably going to raise some eyebrows. So I'm going to make it sort of obvious, and I'm going to open this place called Burn Down Steaks or something like that. And I'm going to have people cook their own, unqualified people, operating fire with grease, doing that, cooking there, right there in the restaurant. And it worked. It worked great. It was exciting. People went there for a long time. And then, obviously, the novelty wore off because you're like, I can do this at home, really. What am I getting, really? So, and then when that happened, poof. And you say, well, that's not right. Well, I don't think not many people were hurt. I don't think anyone was hurt. Right? I mean, people were cheated, but not hurt. Is that hurt? Is that kind of hurt? I think so, maybe. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad this is not a show on justice or anything like that, or morality. It is in a way. I hate to say it. I always think, it's so dangerous to say some things like, you know, everybody is the same and everything. Oh, my gosh. I'm just saying it in fun. But really, it is true, and our hearts know it. I mean, there's levels of knowing it, you know. There's the level of knowing the sameness of people, so you can tolerate them, acknowledge their, get over their sins or whatever, or certainly recognize their motivations. We do it with judgment, but at least recognize it. And then there's a level which you say, oh, God, all those people are me. And you say, well, I'm not capable of it. Well, that's just because I was raised by the people I was raised by. But I mean, if I was over there, it's this Prince and the Pauper stuff. Who knows? But for the grace of God, they say. Well, yes, but for fate. But what if it is me over there? What have I just forgotten? Couldn't you imagine saying, I'm going to give you this. Okay, you listening? Yes. I'm going to create a universe for you. And
Well, I'll be lonely.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to divide you into millions of yous.
Oh, okay, but then I'll still be lonely in a way because I'll know what everybody's thinking.
Wait. Wait. You won't remember that. You will complete you will not recognize yourself. And you will be shattered into a lot of pieces that you don't recognize. And they're all you. You know, how just like you break up glass and you look in it and you're in every little piece. It's not just all pieces of your face.
Yeah.
That's you. The shattered glass of existence. And then you're not going to remember anything. And you'll be confused and challenged. And you will never be lonely. And also, you'll never feel safe. So, good luck.
Oh, wait a minute, but it's all me.
Yeah, but you want to buy. So, I guess there's a price. And this, what I've just told you, is integral to some theologies. They're secret parts. They're secret mystical parts. Are this idea that the universe is a result of God, a singularity, shattering it so that experience can be created, so there can be something over against something, and that something means that there's parts that are hidden, and then you realize that almost everything is hidden, and what we see is the tip of an iceberg, all of us. We don't even know ourselves, what we see sneaking out of the biology. Who knows what's driving us, whether it's the neurology of it, the biology of it, the physics of it. Oh, is there anybody steering it all? And then when we hear even scientists sometimes explain the world, when they explain without God, they say something like nature does this, or when they talk about evolution, they'll say, well, nature has a plan, and the butterfly has evolved. The butterfly hasn't done dookie. No creature has made a decision. It's everything that isn't the creature that makes the decisions and chooses, and you never know. And what survives, survives, and what doesn't, doesn't. And that's a product of the invisible. That's what the mystics say. No, that's actually what biology says if you really look at the evidence of evolution. You know, you can't, as an ant, think, well, you know, I should develop a tougher exoskeleton. So you really can't select for those things. It's just those tough exoskeleton folks do well when the environment changes. Oh, my goodness, and now it's Christmas. Do you have what you need? You think, I will evolve to dope. Christmas will do to you what it does to you. And so elevate above it and float above it. Like, that's the story. If you take anything away from the Santa story, it's say your French goodbye or whatever, Irish goodbye or whatever the goodbye you say where you don't say goodbye. Get in your sleigh and fly up into the air and soar alive with your reindeer over the chimneys full of skeletons. And possibly all those are you too, Santa. All those who would sneak into a house think, I just found the weakest part of the house. I just came from seeing Star Wars, you know, and when Luke is attacking that Death Star, he found a chimney. He said, I'm going to put that rocket down that chimney, and it'll go all the way down there. And then I realized something. These houses, they got chimneys. And a lot of times, they don't have the flue closed. They got it open because they just had a fire or something. I can sneak down in it that way. And then you go down, and you inhale, and you go in. And the first time you exhale, you realize that you're stuck. And then you go, oh, I brought a cyanide tablet, but it's in my pocket. Why are you being so dark? Well, I'm not being dark. It's not us. Oh, my goodness. If I was just going to give you sugar cookies, which is fine, That's got a, everything's got a downside. So I think take your tooth decay now, not disguised as a treat. So give, I thought that was sweet, but then I had this diet of all sweetness. Now I'm unprepared. I am like the athlete who said, feed me cookies. And he was racing up against an alligator who said, I want only health food. I'm going to forego eating a deer today because I've got a race coming up. And they didn't think they could beat the alligator. And that athlete, he ate only cookies. And his life, he thought, was sweet. And then he went to race the alligator. And the alligator wasn't racing so fast, but the problem was that the athlete couldn't outrun the alligator now, even at that slow speed, and the alligator ate him. And then when the alligator ate him, the alligator was able to race even faster, but it was ironic, and it was sort of a Pyrrhic victory, in a way, you know, because he was defeated in his victory. So I don't know what to say. Don't race alligators, first of all. Merry Christmas. When I was listening to that Kolchak episode that we listened to, and I did enjoy it. Oh, my goodness. I enjoyed Darren McGavin has been in so many great things like Kolchak and The Christmas Story. And I'm going to IMDb him. And I bet the comment board's going crazy. All of a sudden, everybody's a super, super fan. Every time you mention somebody. I was hoping that I could do, I can't do a Larry Storch impression. Now, y'all, New Jersey, Larry Storch, I believe, lived out his last days in New Jersey, wasn't he? He was living up in North Jersey, lived to be about 100 years old. We know him as Corporal Agar on F Troop, but he was a hipster before that, and he's got some comedy albums, and he dug jazz, and he had sort of avant-garde sensibilities, and he was a lifelong practitioner of yoga. That said, when you see him, long, complicated life flash by on a screen with three lines for a few minutes in 1974, and then flash ahead to the future. He's dead. It's... I don't want to say it in case I need to ever play a rerun. Rerun? You heard me. Rerun? Fred Berry? No, wait. Can I finish? Rerun! Rerun from What's Happening! And the Lockers! Yes. I love the Lockers. I do too. Man, I love you. If you could just let me finish, brain, that would be wonderful. Talk about the Lockers. I'm not going to talk about popping and locking. I'm not going to. I was literally right in the middle of something. All right?
Tony Basil.
I know.
Is it Basil?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know. But I wasn't talking about that kind of rerun. I was talking about I wanted to keep this evergreen, like a spruce. Can you smell that? Can you smell the pine?
Say, I'm Jewish. So I didn't have a Christmas tree coming up.
Yes, but a lot of the better Hanukkahs, that's what a Hanukkah menorah is actually called. The menorah is that seven-branch thing you see on old coins. And it stood in the temple. And only it should only stand in the temple, apparently. And if you've got one in Temple Beth Schwartz, it's probably a person who was really strict would say, no, don't do that. You should have... What symbol then should hang in our sanctuary? Always a portrait of Myron Cohen. But listen, hear me out. So the best Hanukkahs are made of pine resin. Isn't that beautiful? Very aromatic. What am I smelling? Terpenes. That's terpenes from the shamash is made of fatwood. And so I said, well, be careful. It might burn down your business. Yeah, the flammable Hanukkah store was what he opened after the steak chain. It's a, you know, come and light them and leave them, it was called. You were encouraged to do that. Could you imagine that? Say, oh, yeah, we'd like to, we prefer you leave the candles burning with nobody there. Which is an 80s song, now that I'm thinking about it. Oh, bless you. What's my gift to you? I'm like the little drummer boy. I got nothing. I got a vamp. That poor guy, he showed up. He shows up. He's on his way to a gig. He comes upon the, he's like, oh, a creche. Look at that creche. There's a living creche. And then he goes, oh, damn, no, there's a newborn baby. That's a newborn baby. And not super newborn, a few days old, because it's surrounded by kings. It took a minute to get there. So this drummer boy comes up, and like I say, and he's like, hey, and they go, whoa, 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 can I see your gift, please? And he's like, I was just going by. And then goes, that drum, the gift? And he's thinking, oh, crap. Like, no, I mean, the drum is my livelihood. I'm on my way to a gig. I don't have the drum. And then we don't play greenies. I don't get any money. What's your gift then? And he's like, my gift is my song. And they were like, song? And they said, yes. And they said, we'll play the song. And I'm looking around the room for a drum. If I had a drum, then I could recreate it for you. But I don't. I can use the waste, I'm gonna use the waste can. All right. And this is the song that the little drummer boy played then. He went, hey, I'm playing my drum. I play my drum, bum bum, and play the drum. Baby, come and play the drum. I come from, I'm home to come. I'm on my way to a gig right now. Play the drum and dum, for the baby bum. Dum, cutting on the Christmas bum. There's a baby in the dum dum. I smell sheep. I smell sheep and kings. Bum bum, and baby come. Bum, rub a dum. Rub bum bum, I'm a bump a drum. Dum dum. And they're like, oh, I hate that Danny Kaye crap. One of them's yelling. And so, but by that time, everybody had moved on, because really the baby is the center of attention. And, you know, there's a Mary. Joseph's getting all like, what about me? All the baby's getting all the attention. Like that. That's what St. Joseph is known for. Hey, what about my needs? Like, just 2 seconds, man. What am I going to do with frankincense? It's not for you. It's for the baby. Okay? If I was bringing you something, I'd bring you a pacifier. Big whiny thing. All right? So that's the... Everybody, you're going to play this over and over on Christmas. It's going to be a tradition, I feel like. I wish I had... I should have put some Vince Guaraldi going on in it. Great local DJ, JK47, and he's got I should have had that queued up. I would have thought maybe I'll play it on the Christmas show. He's got some scratching out on some Vince Guaraldi. Sounds great. I love it that way. And you think, well, that's great. Is that, who's that, Schroeder? Which one of them had the Tech 12s going with the, you know, what are you doing, Schroeder? Like that. He did the Flash Transformer. He'd be pop, 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 like Grandmaster Flash, mashing that button. Oh, it's wonderful. That makes me think of Christmas. And mashing the button made me think of Buckethead, which made me think of KFC, which made me think of Christmas in Japan, where they love Kentucky Fried Chicken for Christmas. It's a tradition there. I mean, they're not big on the Christmas part, but they're like, oh, you know, it's an excuse. Just like here, you would think, oh, it's you know, it's some kind of Shinto holiday. I think I want that. What's that kind of pancake? So we do that same kind of thing, but they do it with that. And I didn't mean to plug. I'm not plugging a brand. My goodness, First of all, I'm in Kentucky, so we have all sorts of other. We like to eat people's chicken from elsewhere, because we go, oh, we're not going. I'm not going to eat anything with the word Kentucky on it.
How about these Kentucky chocolates?
Oh, no, thank you. I feel that way with Florida too. This is, have some of this. It's Florida something, and you go, oh, I don't know. I mean, you're in the news a lot for like lowering standards. Yeah, come on, have this is the Florida version. Freedom, I don't know what you put on it. It doesn't have bugs. Okay, that's good. They made a law for a while you couldn't say anything bad about Florida produce or you'd go to jail. I think that's better than health standards. And you just go, well, that takes care of the problem. You nip it on that end. Nobody finds out about it. You're good to go. Oh, bless you. That's the way I feel about the show. There's no critics, and so I'm good. There's no one out there saying, oh, Hardy White Miracle Nutrition is terrible. Don't watch that dang old show. I can't get anybody to, I'd pay for somebody to write that. It'd probably increase my listenership. But then again, I get nothing out of that except expectations from strangers. And I love you. We're friends. We got a little good friend group going here. Let's not ruin a thing. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, New York City, New York, or online, WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you on Christmas.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Appearance, the Miles Davis Ensemble.